Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
All right, welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. We are live from the Hockey Central studio. Very pleased to be joined by Andrew Walker, co-host of Brady and Walker, which it's the airwaves.
March 30th.
My birthday.
Yeah.
March 30th from 1 to 4. We will walk you through the breaking NHL trades today. It is NHL trade deadline day. Hockey Central's trade deadline coverage is airing on Sportsnet Ontario. We are being simulcast on Sportsnet 360 again from our glorious Hockey Central studio.
I haven't done anything here. I haven't even seen it before today.
No.
Which is embarrassing.
I think the last time I was even in the CBC building, I was doing something for like some Sunday morning show.
Like a political?
Well, no, it was not a political thing. Actually, I know it was Mark Spector. We were talking about steroids and sports. So that must have been like 10 years ago. We will keep you informed of all the breaking NHL trades. As we said, it is NHL trade deadline day. Deadline is 3 p.m. There have been 17 trades, or there were 17 trades made leading up to today already made. That was the second most in NHL history, I believe, as I try
to It's really
to
deadline
this.
Week. Jeff Petrie is the latest. Edmonton finally moves their defenseman.
A guy from your neck of the woods, sort of. You're from
He's a Michigan guy.
Well, but I mean,
Jeff
Petrie, the Montreal Canadiens, sending a second and a conditional fifth-round pick to the Edmonton Oilers in return for that. It's actually kind of interesting the defenseman moves, because a lot of the discussion in Toronto, Andrew, as you well know, has been about Dion Phaneuf. And let's talk about this Petrie deal first, and then I want to kind of segue into Dion Phaneuf's situation. But a second-round pick and a conditional fifth-round pick for Jeff Petrie. How does that stack up?
I like it for Montreal. I mean, you're going to have guys in different markets, I guess, be overrated or underrated on the national conscience in the hockey world.
Mm-hmm.
I think Petrie's an underrated guy. Out of all that group, including, you know, the Kimmo Tiimonen and the Braden Coburns and all these guys, Petrie's 27 years old. And I think you look and you see, oh, God, he's minus 25 every year. And I think he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be real good in Montreal. And when the going rate was, you know, late first-round picks, you know, or a second into third or 2 seconds or a second and a prospect for these guys, I think the Canadiens and Marc Bergevin did really well here.
Well, and I think the thing you have to like about this deal, if you're a fan of the Canadiens and if you're a fan of Jeff Petrie, even if you're Jeff Petrie, is you're going into a situation where your role is going to be really clearly defined, I would think, with the Canadiens.
Yeah, I would think so.
Probably a comfortable role for Jeff Petrie.
He's not going to be having to log those heavy minutes, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, produce points. But he can move the puck and he can skate. He's a beautiful skater. And he was a guy that Edmonton really, like, he's the exact kind of guy that Edmonton needs
mm-hmm.
and needed going forward. But he has been there for so long and has been kicked around so long that, you know, as I understood it, there was basically almost no amount of money they could have mm-hmm. given him for him to stay there. And I don't blame him.
As I said, the 17 trades made in the 7 days prior to deadline day, the second most in NHL history, 2004, 24 trades were made. And for purposes of accounting, if you want to call it that, the two trades that were made overnight are considered deadline day trades, so they're not included among the list.
Right.
And there's still 17 trades. Given what we've seen Arizona get for Keith Yandle, given what we've seen Philadelphia get for Kimmo Tiimonen, and given what we just saw Montreal give up and Edmonton get for Jeff Petrie, are you getting a sense that the return for defensemen right now makes it more or less likely, Andrew, that Dion Phaneuf gets moved today?
More likely, and it's not the return, it's as we creep closer and closer to 3 p.m., teams aren't going to be comfortable heading into the postseason in what I think is this year more wide open mm-hmm. than any other year, right? If you are the Detroit Red Wings or the Washington Capitals or the New York Rangers, and you know they've made their play, I think any of these teams could make the Stanley Cup final, any of them. I think there's literally 10 teams that could be lifting that Stanley Cup over their head in a few months from now. That wouldn't be a huge surprise. But the one thing we know, you're not getting there mm-hmm. without defensemen that can eat minutes or without the defensive depth that you need. So I think the Dion Phaneuf thing is really interesting because I think we like to hammer on him here in Toronto.
Yeah.
But I think around...
Unfairly, I would say, in a lot of cases.
Sure. But I think around the league... No one's going to like the term. No one's going to like, you know, bringing on another $32 million in salary over the next 6 years. But I think generally he's appreciated for what he is, at least. Mm-hmm. Not for what he's not, what we look at here in Toronto, but what he is around the league. Can someone make it fit?
I mean, one thing you know about Dion Phaneuf, and I've made this point often on my show. I know you've talked about it as well. I think this may be a rare thing in that you've got a Toronto radio show. We're simulcast today where you have two guys who actually really haven't hammered on Dion Phaneuf that much, because part of the issue with Dion Phaneuf in Toronto has been that he was made captain. I don't blame a guy for being made captain. People have said, well, maybe he should have turned it down. Yeah, Dion Phaneuf, you want to be captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs? No, thanks. I think I'd rather do something else. No one's ever going to do that. But as a guy who logs minutes, as a guy who plays with an edge, as a guy who plays with an edge within the confines of the rules, Dion Phaneuf's not going to take a stupid penalty for you in the final 3 minutes or 4 minutes of an NHL game, of a playoff game. He's not going to.
Yeah.
He's capable of playing a physical game within the boundaries of the rules, and he's got a little bit of an offensive aspect to the game, too. For me, Andrew, he's a perfect fit for a team like Detroit. I mean, he just picture him on that team where he doesn't have to be the leader. He doesn't have to be the big guy. He can just be a very good number two or maybe even number three defenseman. That's a great fit for him and a great fit for them, I think.
I think it is. The tricky thing is, because people are talking about scorched earth and get what you can, I don't know what the cutoff is for the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of what you'd expect. They can move Dion Phaneuf. They can move him like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do they expect a guy back that a Detroit is not willing to part with? Because they'd have to take some money or eat some money, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, does Toronto insist on, does Dave Notice and Brendan Shannon insist on an Anthony Mantha if they're going to eat money? And is that a non-starter for Detroit? You know they're talking, and you know there's some pieces moving around, but I don't know if one's a non-starter or not. And everyone seems, that's the first name, right? Detroit always seems to be.
Oh, yeah. They've been connected with Dion Phaneuf for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they seem to be the team most connected with him.
Do you think he goes? Is it over or under 50% today?
I think it's really under 50%. But I know Chris Johnson of Sportsnet thoughts. Yeah, we kind of share the same thing. I think he's gone. I don't think he's back next year. I think he's gone. But I just think that's the move you make in the summer when people have a better idea of what their payroll obligations are, when you have a better idea of what your payroll obligations are. We can get your ducks lined up when you maybe have done some groundwork to see whether or not you're trading Phil Kessel as well. I would just as soon wait until the summer to do that.
Take this for what it's worth. I didn't even tweet this over the weekend, but the Leafs played in Washington mm-hmm. last night. So Sunday morning, Dave Nonis and Dion Phaneuf spent a great deal of time in conversation behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for whatever it's worth, right? The guys being at least kept abreast of the situation. Whether that's just something you do with your captain on a regular basis, whether he was saying, don't worry, you're not going anywhere, we'll revisit in the summer, or if he's saying, hey, here's the deal. You know, tell Alicia to have her bags back because we're doing everything we can to move you in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, you've got to think that if Dion, hey, I don't know how David Nonis does his business, but if I'm a general manager and I'm telling a player you're not going anywhere, I don't need a lengthy conversation to tell a guy that. That's the type of thing you go up and you go, hey, you know what?
Right.
You're here. Don't worry about it. It's not a lengthy, unless Dion comes back and says, really? Can we change that?
You know,
do I have to be here?
You know what's funny? Because if you put percentages on all these guys, and we all knew that Winnick was gone and Santarelli was gone, and that was obvious. The Leafs would like to move Joffrey Leupel even more than they'd like to move Dion Phaneuf.
Sure.
I really believe that. But Dion Phaneuf, even with his 6 years remaining, might be an easier sell than Joffrey Lupul.
Well, I mean, you need
defensemen.
You need defensemen.
You don't need a forward at $5 million who's a cap buster if he's not playing.
No, and we've seen historically, in recent history, teams load up in defensemen at the trade deadline. It's a commodity that, more than any other commodity that's moved. And the other thing with Joffrey Lupul, we all agree, healthy Joffrey Lupul, he helps a lot of teams. Healthy. And that's seldom seen with Joffrey Lupul. And, you know, whether it's baseball or basketball, football to a lesser degree, but certainly hockey, if you're going to make a move for somebody at a trade deadline, you want to know you're getting a guy who's going to play. You don't need a guy with all the stuff that goes on when you're going down the stretch, when you're trying to figure out how your roster's going to look, your line combinations, who's getting ice time. The last thing you need is a guy that's flip a coin whether or not he's going to be ready to play.
One word today, though, and that's desperation, right? How many teams out there in a year that's wide open, and how many GMs for that matter, will look at Dion Phaneuf 6 years? Maybe Ken Holland isn't one of these guys. Dion Phaneuf 6 years, Joffrey Lupul's 3 years, and say, I'm not going to be around by the end of that contract or those contracts. Yeah, we want to win. We need to win. And is Joffrey Lupul a guy that can go in your lineup, if you can find a way to fit him in, and at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs has 10 goals for you, right? And if flags fly forever, again, it's really easy to say, patience right now, and hey, we're standing back. When 230 rolls around and you're a piece shy on a year where you think you can do some winning in the playoffs, desperation. We've seen it before.
Right.
We've seen it before.
Well, yeah, and I think it needs to be mentioned too that when you are acquiring a player with term left in the contract, Andrew, what you said is very valid. A lot of general managers, now they're not going to come out and say it publicly, but a lot of general managers are going to look at it and go, I'm not going to be around for years 5 and
sure.
6. And if I am, that means this deal's been perfect.
Won. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they won't say that. But, you know, guys, same thing in baseball. Guys like Andrew or Alex Anthopoulos make deals, Andrew. And, oh, my God, they signed a guy to a 5-year contract. And the GM's thinking, I might not be here for 4 of those years.
Like, I look at a team like Washington, and it's funny to say because I think Washington has as good a chance, if not a better chance, even as a wild card team in that conference, than they did when they were winning President's Trophies and got Yaroslav Halak in the first round. I love the way Washington looks right now. They have a guy like Brooks Like who makes $4.5 million and gives you really nothing for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. Would a Joffrey Lupul not be an upgrade on that if you can move it back? Leafs save about $1 million plus a year. Mm-hmm. You get a draft pick back. I mean, if you are the Washington Capitals, and they went out, they got Glenn Cross, but there's still that glaring hole in their top nine.
Yeah.
Are you desperate enough to just say, screw the injury concerns? We'll do it. We'll do it, and we'll see where the cards fall.
The other thing, if you're the Capitals as well, you haven't engaged Alexander Ovechkin. You haven't had for, 3 years?
Nick Backstrom might be the best centerman in hockey
Nick
right
Backstrom,
now.
Nick Backstrom, so you've got two.
And you got a goalie.
And you have a goalie. And you know what? You've got a coach. You've got a coach that's brought some stability. A coach whose system, I think, combined with that talent level, should work in the playoffs.
I like Washington. But then again, I mean, you go around the East, there's a lot of teams I like right now. In the sense of, yes, if all the chips fall into play, the Habs could be in the Stanley Cup final. The Rangers could. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they could. They were last year. Washington could.
Tampa Bay
could. It's funny enough because the team right near the top of their division, I don't think the Islanders are ready yet. Right?
Yeah.
And they've looked great.
They've looked great. They've made good moves. But I watched the Islanders, Andrew, and you wonder, I don't know if it's how that game will translate in the playoffs, but they almost strike you as one of those teams, and you see with a lot of teams, this happened to the Ottawa Senators when they started to get good, where they have that good regular season, they go to the playoffs, and they just take a step back because it's just the playoffs. It's a different animal. Then next year, they go back, and now they've built in the experience.
Well, and isn't it funny? Because who do they acquire overnight? Braden Coburn.
Braden Coburn.
What's Braden Coburn? A defenseman that can eat some minutes. Mm-hmm. Again, it brings us all the way back to Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah. It is the Jeff Blair Show. We're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan from 9 to 12. Simulcast today on Sportsnet 360, part of Sportsnet's trade deadline coverage, which, of course, if you want, you can watch on the Sportsnet channels. We'll be joined by a lot of Sportsnet regulars. Damian Cox, Mike Johnson will be joining us. We'll have guests over the phone as well in a few minutes. Dave Maloney. We have Dave. Dave Maloney, the Rangers analyst, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show along with Andrew Walker. Good morning, Mr. Maloney.
Good morning, fellas. How are you doing this morning?
Well, you know, it's how many hours till 3 o'clock? Like everybody else, we're sitting here waiting. It's been busy though. It's been one of the busier weeks leading up to the deadline, and nice bit of business by the Rangers. I've got to think that Dave, seeing what they saw in the playoffs last year, as far as their special teams concerned, as far as their power play is concerned, Keith Yandle's got to be a pretty good fit for that team.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the obvious look, but I think more importantly, if you're going to compare last year's run, which I'm not, I guess it's obvious or easy to do that. I think the other point is the guys that they missed badly in the back end, well, so far this season, is Anton Stralman. And although Stralman certainly is the offensive capability, I'm not sure he's as capable as Yandle, the point is, Yandle is an NHL defenseman at the time also. Mm-hmm. And now you have five with Dan Boyle. Boyle has not been quite as good as expected. So there's certainly no doubt that the power play was an issue. He should help with power play, but I think this is a quality NHL defenseman. Now, he's a bit of a high wire act when it comes mm-hmm. to defending. I think he's been better. I think he hasn't been quite as noticeable with his egregious mistakes. In the bigger picture, I just think he's a defender also that's been in the league, and at 27 is a good asset.
Hindsight being what it is, what does this say about the Rangers and the Dan Boyle signing? Because he was kind of supposed to be this guy. And in a perfect world, you know that the Rangers didn't want to give up Anthony DeClair mm-hmm. and picks to solve a need that they thought they had solved in the offseason.
Well, again, if you're looking as specific, and I guess it's easy to look at it, the power play angle. I thought going in to this trade deadline that the Rangers needed to address the depth on the blue line. I'm not sure that anyone thought that this thing was going to come about with a quality two-time All-Star Yandle being available. I don't think the experiment with Boyle is over as far as a power play. I think he's still basically a power play guy. So I think it's easy to pass judgment now that it hasn't worked. But I just think the acquisition of Yandle adds more than just a power play angle to this blue line, and I think it's still incumbent on Dan Boyle to figure it out.
In conversation with Dave Maloney and the Jeff Blair Show alongside Andrew Walker from Brady and Walker, which you will be able to hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan starting March 30th from 1 to 4. Why do so many defensemen get moved at the deadline, Dave? I mean, historically, we've seen a lot of defensemen moved.
Well, I remember Scotty Bowman. I played for Scotty in Buffalo. And the day I was traded, within hours, he brought back Jim Schoenfeldt, Jerry Korab, and myself. And I remember him saying, come springtime, you cannot be deep enough to the blue line. Now, what is the reason for that? I don't know. I don't know that I could say specifically, but I know that has been the sense all along. The Rangers last year, Rafael Diaz, was kind of an afterthought at the trade deadline. And he starts in game one in the Stanley Cup Finals. I just think you have to have NHL depth on the blue line. If all else is equal, come springtime, you need NHL depth to be a difference. And now we talk about the importance. And youth on the blue line in the springtime is a precarious situation. So I really, now why that is, I don't know that I can pinpoint, but it seems to be a reality and probably validated by the fact that so many teams are looking for depth on the blue line at this time of the year.
So how did the organization view Anthony DeClaire? Is this a sell high thing? I mean, we just saw him here in this city in the World Juniors, and he was unbelievable. But I think you talk to five different people in the hockey world, and not everyone thinks there's as much star quality as others do. I mean, I think he's a great player. I was surprised at the fact that they gave up as much as they did to get Yandel. How is DeClaire viewed inside the Rangers organization?
Well, I think they thought he was certainly someone, you know, that was going to fit into the future quite nicely. I mean, you're not getting a two-time All-Star, 27-year-old on the blue line for somebody you didn't think highly of. I mean, he really, and John Moore, I think John Moore is a very serviceable defenseman. I think he's paired with the right guy. You know, he's an NHL 5-6 guy. So, but, you know, the conversation between the Rangers and Arizona turned to reality as far as making a deal when DeClaire's name was put into the equation. So there's no question that the Rangers felt very highly of him, highly enough, you know, that obviously became something to get Yandel. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting. Obviously, there's a connection between Domi and Max Domi and Anthony DeClaire coming out of the World Junior Championships. Now, if my brother Don can figure out a way to get Sam Bennett or Sam Reinhardt there, then he's got, you know, he's got a really good threesome that has had some chemistry together. But that being said, I don't think there was certainly some thought when Anthony DeClaire dropped from a bona fide first round to the third round in his draft year, that there might have been some attitude issues or something, but goodness gracious, 17, 18. And by all observations, I talked to him numerous times here. He's a tremendous young man, respectful, talented guy. So I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, but I think from a beholden sense, the Rangers standpoint, they thought very highly of him.
Dave, what do you expect to see from the Rangers up till 3 o'clock now? Are they done? Are they, would you say they're monitoring the situation? And as Andrew Walker pointed out, this is a year where, I mean, I think we ran down just off the top of my head, of our head, we ran down six teams that we think could come out of the Eastern Conference and be in the Stanley Cup Final. There's a lot of balances here.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I'd agree. I mean, I think as far as the Rangers is concerned, you have to think that any responsible GM is going to be trolling the waters until 3 o'clock. I think the you know, a little softer deal was moving Stempniak. I know they tried to move him for a bit of time. And James Shepard, who Doug Risebrough drafted in Minnesota in 2006, was acquired from San Jose for, I believe, a fourth rounder. But that's, you know, again, it's a filler. It's a depth role. I think if you look back, I know we started this conversation speaking about the Rangers' run last spring. And anybody that gets there, there are a number of things that happen. St. Louis' mother, that whole situation. Chris Kreider runs into Carey Price. He goes down. There's a lot of things that you can't predict. But I think the one thing when you look at that Ranger club, too, you cannot discount how important Brian Boyle, Derek Dorsett, and Dominic Moore were. Any team now, they talk about it, it becomes cliche. You probably, you know, your length in spring might be as deep as you are. So if there's a way to continue to kind of sniff around there, I wouldn't be surprised. But if the Rangers were to stand pat from here on in, that wouldn't surprise me.
Is this a better team than what we saw last June?
Well, certainly not with Henrik Lundqvist on the sideline. I mean, that still is the key to this Ranger story. And it's been status quo. Asked yesterday about his status. The Rangers' response was, we'll let you know when he's ready, sort of thing. So my impression is he still has an MRI to take and see how everything's healed. So if Henrik Lundqvist is healthy, or when he's healthy, are they better? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they're better. And yet you have time to be better here with 6 weeks left in the regular season.
Dave, as always, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for doing this today.
All right, guys. My pleasure. Have a good one.
Take care. That is Dave Maloney.
I kind of forgot Lundqvist was hurt.
That's all right. You can't keep track of everything. I mean, there's all sorts of trades.
Oh, he must be coming back.
I think he'll be
acquiring Keith Yandel.
Yeah, I think I would think the Rangers expect to see Henrik Lundqvist back. It is the Jeff Blair Show. We're on. I was going to say on location. It really does feel like we're on the scene at the CBC at Hockey Central Studios. The trade deadline again is 3 p.m. today, 3 p.m. Eastern. The last trade we have to report: Jeff Petrie of the Edmonton Oilers going to the Montreal Canadiens for a second-round pick and a conditional fifth-round pick. I guess conditional means it could turn into a fourth-round pick.
Interesting reports. I'm not sure if you read, but the much-maligned Slava Voynov could be on the move to the Philadelphia Flyers. Really interesting. What with Voynov's legal troubles?
Right.
Right? Are we going to see this fabulous player?
Yes.
Are we going to see him in the NHL again? And, I mean, there was this whole... I mean, they sent Mike Richards to the minors. They're doing their best to clear some sort of cap room. But the big thing was the Voynov issue. How much room does this clear for LA, who might end up as the eighth seed again, much like they were in 2012?
And a team, we might add, that in the past has been connected to.
Daryl Sutter is not afraid of the Antonov.
No, I wouldn't think he is.
Not at all.
I wouldn't think he is. And that, for I guess from Philadelphia's point of view, you know, you've moved Kimmo Tiiminen. At some point, Voinoff is going to be playing hockey again. Mm-hmm. I would think. At some point, he'll be playing hockey again. The deal makes kind of a lot of sense from the Flyers' point of view.
Without bringing in the moral dilemmas of it, I think there should have been about 29 teams kicking tires on Slava Voinov.
Yes.
He's good.
Well,
he looked good here in Toronto.
And you make the point. Now, of course, there is a moral aspect to this, but you know what? That will be dealt with by the legal system. That'll be dealt with by the courts. And again, if you're a team that thinks you're 2 years away, or maybe even a year and a half away from being good or from being really competitive, quite a pickup. If you could afford to ride it out. And the one thing we know about the Philadelphia Flyers are not afraid to have guys with issues, shall we say, in their team.
Very true.
They keep getting rid of them, but then they keep bringing guys back in. And if you're the Flyers, you can afford to be patient with that guy.
Voinov has a couple of cup rings. Two. Mm-hmm. Two cup rings. And he was no small part of either of them.
No.
Pretty good player.
Yes, he is. We are going to take a break. When we come back, the one and only Scotty Bowman. Get Scotty Bowman's take on NHL trade deadline day. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and simulcast on Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're on the air. Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Simulcast on Sportsnet 360 is part of Sportsnet's continuing coverage of the NHL's trade deadline, which is up until 3 o'clock Eastern today. You can catch Hockey Central's trade deadline coverage on the Sportsnet channels. Just to get you up to date as we await Scotty Bowman, the Edmonton Oilers have sent Jeff Petrie to the Montreal Canadiens for a second-round draft pick and a conditional fifth-round draft pick. That happened about 30 minutes ago. Andrew, the Slava Voinov story that we were talking about, his agent has told people that Voinov has been traded or is going to be traded to Philadelphia. No confirmation.
Yeah, that's where it started. The report started is that his agent had said that Slava Voinov, two-time cup winner, would be on his way to the Flyers. But so far, all our guys, Chris Johnson being one of them, has said there's no truth to that yet.
He is on the suspended list, right?
Yes.
I don't think you can trade somebody on a suspend. I know you can't in baseball. You can't trade a guy in a suspended list. You can't trade a guy in the middle of his 50-game suspension for PED use. So right. I'd be surprised if...
It might be... I wonder, too, because, I mean, who's the general manager in Philly? It's former LA Kings staffer Ron Hextall. If there's not a... agreement in place.
The deal's in the drawer.
The deal's in the drawer. That's what I'd think.
Scotty Bowman is a senior advisor to hockey operations for the Chicago Blackhawks, of course, a hockey Hall of Famer. And Scotty Bowman joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Scotty, thanks a lot for doing this today. Never used to be this crazy on trade deadline day, was it?
Well, it's not even a deadline day. It's been happening now for... No, it hasn't. This is really... I wouldn't say unusual, but I think the teams were anxious to get going, and it makes sense if you're going to make a deal, and especially if it's a lot of them are rentals. You know, you get the player as soon as you can, because everybody's in a different kind of fight, you know, for to get in or to, you know, to improve their standing.
And you know, Scotty, one of the things we've been talking about, you look around the NHL, even you look at the East, there are maybe five or six teams that have a shot at coming out of the East. We know that the West is just, you know, 1-8 it's up for grabs. There are obviously some teams that are better positioned and better than others, but there are a lot of teams that I think this year, realistically, teams like maybe even Nashville, look at where they are in the standings and go, you know what, we got a shot at going to the Stanley Cup. Does that explain the fact that we saw so many trades in the week leading up to the deadline, the second most in NHL history?
I think what it is you have a league that has so much parity. I don't think it's going to change that much, the parity, because you see the draft choices. I mean, how do you rebuild a team? I mean, you rebuild with different ways, but I think because of the parity and the fact that a lot of teams feel the window of opportunity is not there. You know, the teams in the upper echelon feel the crunch that if you got so many years to get it done, you get so many chances to get in, and especially if you're in a high spot, you know, they've had a good year. If they're in a high spot in the standings, then they're just looking ahead and saying, you know, we're not going to, you can't keep all the players now when you build up a good team, your third and fourth line players that have meant so much to your team, they don't want to stay third and fourth line players, and if they're on a powerful team, they sort of have to. And if they get a chance to get out, or the team has to trade them, then they become, you know, into the higher price tags. You know, players. That's what I think happens. It's so hard now. It's just impossible, as we know. I mean, we live it every day in Chicago. That you get some good young players. I mean, how was the team built? It was built because the team was very weak. I mean, they were, and your draft year, you know, obviously Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews came back-to-back years. Toews was the third pick overall, and Kane, Dale Talon, won the lottery that year and went from number four to number one, which can't even happen now. But so that's what I'm looking at, is the parity in the league and the window of opportunity for some teams. And also the lower teams, the opportunity to rebuild. I was looking at Arizona. I mean, they have to rebuild quite a bit. We know now without Yandel and Vermette. But the thing I'm in a quandary now is we used to look when I was coaching. We'd look down the stretch and you'd look. Well, this team might not be able to beat this team, but you can't say that now because Arizona. They've depleted their ranks to get a lot of draft picks. They have two firsts, two seconds, two thirds in this year's draft. I don't even know going forward, probably next year a bunch. So that's what I feel.
Scotty Bowman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You know what's amazing is because the game has changed so much and we're in different eras, but the one thing that never changes around this time of year as teams – you know, begin to address their needs going to the playoffs, it's the adage, right? You can never have enough defensive depth. And you even go back to your – it was the same way with your Detroit teams that were winning cups. If you were ever going to make a move – I know a lot of guys didn't come in, but it was the, you know, Dmitry Mironov or Jamie McCown, or in comes Yuri Slager. You always had to have defensive depth and maybe even a guy or two sitting in the press box. And it, again, it's what we're seeing in the, at the 2015 trade deadline.
Yeah, I can recall going back into, I think it was about 1970 when the Boston Bruins won the first of their two cups, 70 and 72. And the New York Rangers had, I mean, I knew because I was in St. Louis in 1967, and we made a deal with Emil Francis. He was building up the Rangers, and we traded early in the season. We had Ron Stewart, a real good, he had off to a great start, but he was 36, and Emil wanted him in a deal early in the season because his team was getting stronger, and he wanted Ron Stewart because Chicago was the team at that time, and I mean, really good young team, and Bobby Hull. They had nobody to really play against them, so we made the deal. And the Rangers got stronger. And if you look at the 1970 playoffs, I think they lost to the Boston Bruins in six games when it was a real tight series. But the Rangers lost two or three defensemen. And no, the depth is so important on defense. They suffered because of that. That was when the Rangers, a little window, about 3 or 4 years where they – Boston was a strong team, as we know. I mean, Boston were winning between 55 and 60 games, even 1 year 59. And so, yeah, defense worries you a lot when you're in the playoffs, and you're especially later in the rounds, maybe the second or third round. All of a sudden, you get a couple of bad injuries on defense that guys can't play. And you know, to bring up a young kid and put him into that playoff run is tough. And if you have a veteran, we made deals when I was in Detroit. We made deals that we were looking for depth. I mean, 1 year I knew our defense was not that bad, but we've got Slava Fetisov from Lou Lamoriello. Mm-hmm. I call Lou, and he was sitting in the stands. He was like their seventh or eighth defenseman, and Lou was pretty good to deal with. I liked to deal with him at that time, and you know, I had a good relationship with him. And I said, look, Slava's not. He likes Slava too, and he said, yeah, I can let him go. I think we paid a third or a fourth. I'm not sure. The people in Detroit, I was talking with them. They said, my God, 38-year-old guy. You've given a third-round pick. I said, well, you know, we want to try to win. And if we get injuries, well, we didn't even need injuries. Slava came in and had a great playoff run and even played another year and won another one. So I think you're right. Your defensive problems can really escalate if you get some injuries and you want to use a young kid in a big playoff game. It's pretty tough.
Joined by Scotty Bowman on the Jeff Blair Show. What was the difference to you, or what do you think the difference is for most NHL general managers, Scotty, between trading a first-round pick and a second-round pick? And I know a lot depends on where you're drafting. If you're drafting late in the first round, you can almost say it's an early second round pick. But I think you know what I mean. You're sitting there and you've visualized a deal and you've got some options on the table. One of them includes your first round draft pick. What do you have to get in return to move that first round draft pick? Is there some sort of aspect of added value that takes a pick from the second round to the first round? I'll take that as a no.
Lost him.
The beauty of live radio and TV. Scotty Bowman, we will attempt to regain contact with Scotty Bowman. I'll have to remember what the question was.
Chicago is such an interesting case because everyone would give them a pass.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah.
They get a pass.
Yeah.
But as we've all learned, look at this market. Yeah. I mean, how many chances do you really get? And Chicago is, again, as good as anybody, but Patrick Kane goes out for 12 weeks. Playoffs start in six.
Six, yeah.
So they go out to get Antoine Vermette.
And, you would think that a team like Chicago would have a little grace period. Here we go. We're rejoined again by Scotty Bowman on the Jeff Blair Show. Scotty, I was asking you the question. The difference from a general manager's point of view between a second-round pick and a first-round pick. What do you have to get in added value to go from giving away your second-round pick to a first-round pick?
Well, you have to look at what you have in your organization. And I guess the best way I could look at it, and you know, when you give up even some prospects, you have to look, what have you got? You look at your depth chart in your organization and what do you have coming? If you're a strong team, and you've probably set yourself up to have. I mean, if you have good depth and you try to ripen your players the right way, you don't rush them along. Mm-hmm. Then, as long as you know you've got something coming, you don't have the kitchen's not the cupboard's not completely bare, and that's the risk you have to take. And you know now approximately where you're going to, what kind of a player you're going to be giving up. You can go into your amateur scouting and you can look. Look, we're going to draft somewhere between. I mean, we're going to be the draft choice is somewhere between say 20 and 25. Give me a list this year of what's there, and you know, and this year's it's so much different because, I mean, there's no question that the scouts are and they know what's going on. They're saying that. Both Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel are generation-type players. And that doesn't mean there's not other players. A lot of people are saying that there's going to be between maybe 6 to 8 players in the draft this year that are going to play on the NHL teams next year for those teams that select them. But I think when you look at, you have to look at the player, the type of player. If you're able to give this year's draft, you can get a pretty good run on the type of player that you're giving up, you know, within reason. I mean, you the first 20 to 30 players, you pretty well get your list right. Mm. But if you're talking about giving up a future, that gets dicey for me because you don't know how things are in the standings the succeeding year. I know when the Hawks just made the deal with Arizona. Mm-hmm. Stan made it with Dave Maloney, my son Stan, and they were talking about, you know, what year, first year, this year, or next year, as the Hawks have both picked, and they felt like this year you had to protect yourself with the Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel situation. I mean, it's a very slim chance that you wouldn't want to give a lottery pick away, but then you don't know next year. You know what the salary cap is not going to be that high. Do you have to make changes? I mean, you have to get rid of some players. You probably have to. So you don't know next year where you're going to be, and you could slide down. I mean, we know that. So I think you got to evaluate, and also you have to know your needs for right now. And they looked at their team and they got a couple of young centermen that are going to be there in a year or two. But you know to go on a playoff run is quite a bit. That's why Vermette became so appealing to them. You know, he was a good face-off player and he's also been a good steady two-way, the type of player that Joel Quenneville likes.
Scotty, are we going to learn just how dynamic Patrick Kane has been to this team's playoff success, or is this a Blackhawks team that can absorb it easier than, say, another team could?
You have to change. Definitely, you're going to have to change your style. I mean, but they've been a pretty strong defensive club, and oddly enough, they're not a team that's feasted on the power play for whatever reason. Nobody can put a finger on it. Power play has been running around 15th, 16th, 17th in the league, and some teams, if they don't have a power play going, they're not going to win games. But the Hawks have won some games this year, and Patrick has been a terrific player all around. But he's so dynamic when there's even a player less or two on the ice. So I don't think they're going to have to change an awful lot. Obviously, the way they play. They try to play defense first, and you know they're gonna miss is his component in the tight games. It seems that's to me the difference in a lot of players. I mean, you can look at stats and you can say, oh my God, he's a 25 goal man, he's a 30 goal man, or a 75 point man. But are the points realistic? I mean, you have to really analyze, and that's where people wonder about analytics. I mean, are they? They're not the end all for sure. But I used to really like to figure out who gets the goals in the big games, who decides, who gets them in the third period, who, you know, when the game is on the line, things like that. And that's where you miss Patrick Kane. But we know the playoffs are much tighter, and sure. He's been a good playoff performer. So I think that's what, you know, he's got over a point a game, I think. I'm pretty sure if you look up his record. But
right.
That's a quandary for them to for sure.
Scotty, we got to scoot. As always, it is great to talk to you. Be well, and thanks for joining us today and being part of our trade deadline coverage.
Oh, thank you. Nice talking to you guys. Bye.
Take care. It's one and only Scotty Bowman.
You don't need analytics to tell you that Patrick Kane scores big goals in big games.
Yes, indeed. This is the Jeff Blair Show, live from the Hockey Central studio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.